Hello and welcome back to The Rusted Culture. I'm your host, Frank Ebersold, and we're glad that you tuned back in today. And the thing that we'd like to start off with is the Russian investigation and a little bit about that. And I just want to say, oh my gosh, the Nunes memo. What a disappointment. What a dud. And I don't want to bombard anybody with anything more about that memo than this. And that is the FISA warrant that was used to surveil the little bug, Carter Page himself. It was warranted. Even if you remove anything and everything pertaining to the infamous dossier, if you take all of that out, it was still warranted. And you might know the answer to this, but some people might say, why? Why is it warranted? And that's because Carter Page was already on the FBI's radar screen for being sucked into the Russian intelligence machine as an asset that they were cultivating like some sort of garden turnip. The FBI had every right to surveil Carter Page, and the four federal judges that approved the warrant every 3 months, well, they knew that too. In fact, folks, here's what Carter Page said back in 2013. And I'm quoting Carter Page. He said, over the past half year, I've had the privilege to serve as an informal advisor to the staff of the Kremlin. That, my friends, is exactly why the FBI was listening to Carter Page, because the Russians were trying to recruit Carter Page with the promise of business opportunities. Even after all of that, Congressman Devin Nunes said to Brett Baer on Friday night on Fox, and I quote him, he said, I don't believe that somebody like Mr. Page should be a target of the FBI. Really? You've got to be kidding me. The Russians were cultivating Carter Page right along, and the FBI's got all the evidence of them doing exactly that. But you know what? Nunes isn't alone in thinking that Carter Page is as innocent as a choir boy in all of this. There's always crusty Rush Limbaugh that comes to the rescue for, you know, the fringe right viewpoint on this. And Rush Limbaugh on Friday had this to say, and I quote him here. He says, the Steele dossier was it. That's what they had. A made-up, salacious, factually absent opposition research document prepared for the campaign of Hillary Clinton that was used to surveil. It was used to secure a warrant from the FISA court to spy on Trump and his campaign. Actually, hold it now, Rush Limbaugh. Your boy Carter Page had a lot to do with getting the FISA warrant on his own. And you can thank Carter Page for that. And according to Congressman Adam Schiff, who, unlike Devin Nunes, he actually read the 50-page FISA warrant on Carter Page. He said on Sunday, February 4th, that only very select components of what Steele reported about Page were included in the FISA application. Very select components of what Steele, in other words, the dossier reported about Page, were included in the FISA application. But anyway, thanks for the memo, Devin, and acknowledging in that memo on the last page that it was George Papadopoulos that actually kicked off the entire FBI investigation. This, however, meant nothing to Donald Trump, who just sees what he wants to see through his rose-colored glasses, and he tweeted from Mar-a-Lago this weekend that this vindicates him, as if Mueller has, after all this time, nothing on Donald Trump, as if Mueller has absolutely nothing. It's just confounding. And it's just impossible for any reasonable person wearing those same rose-colored glasses that Donald Trump is wearing to see what Donald Trump sees. It's just like the song says, folks, they show only the beauty because they hide all the truth. So those rose-colored glasses. I think I need to get a pair of those myself. Wouldn't that be fun? It's like some sort of, like Trump has got some sort of coping mechanism, isn't it? That Trump deals with whatever reality he does deal with, and he deals with the reality that he doesn't like by coming up with some sort of alternative reality that makes it all okay. You know, back in the day, quite a long time ago, I always wanted to be a psychologist, but since I'm not, I asked a friend of mine who is a psychologist in Minneapolis, and she said that what I'm describing is called projecting. And folks, according to LifeScript.com, it defines projecting like this. Psychological projection is a defense mechanism people subconsciously employ in order to cope with difficult feelings or emotions. Psychological projection involves projecting undesirable feelings or emotions onto someone else, rather than admitting to or dealing with the unwanted feelings. I'm no psychologist, but I think Donald Trump is suffering from psychological projection. That's in my humble opinion. And if you'll remember back in the debates with Hillary, when she said, "You're a puppet," and she was referring to him being a puppet of Putin, Vladimir Putin. Remember that? Trump shot back, "I'm not the puppet, you're the puppet." Oh, for God's sakes, that's projection. So when Trump says this memo vindicates him, when it in fact doesn't vindicate him, and when he says things like the investigation is a witch hunt, he's projecting all the negative connotations and undesirable feelings that go with that because he doesn't want to deal with that. And he simply can't deal with the facts of the investigation, can he? He just can't bring himself to the reality, I think, of what's going on. It's borderline cuckoo, but as we know, you know, he's been through the test, the Parkinson's test, or whatever the hell it was, that verified that he's not going off the deep end. I don't think he's crazy, but, oh, God, I think the psychological projection thing, I think there's something to it. So, you know, folks, you really have to wonder what Robert Mueller is thinking right now. There has to be a lot of talk and speculation about whether or not Mueller would indict Trump on obstruction of justice charges. There's been a lot of chatter about that. And it's true, a sitting president has never been indicted before, but really, folks, I mean, does any of that matter? Does Mueller have anything to lose by indicting a sitting president? I mean, it might get tossed around in the court system, right? I mean, they might toss it around, but without probably any great delays, you know, and worst case, I think it would probably end up getting referred to Congress in the worst case scenario, which by then actually might hold the promise of Democratic control after the November elections, especially if one of the voting points could be dealing with the likelihood of a presidential impeachment as a part of that election. We just might be looking at a House of Representatives that's under Democratic control. So the other big question here, folks, is what is Trump going to do? And I mean, that's like trying to catch a bouncing ball here. I mean, although the Dems have been extremely diligent, I think, in this House Intelligence probe, it appears like having Devin Nunes as the chairman of the House Intelligence Investigation into Russian meddling, it seems like that was only a front for Nunes to run interference for the White House. You know, he's got these very close ties to the White House from, remember that midnight ride that he took? That crazy midnight ride? Remember that? Well, it's beginning to seem like the whole House Intelligence Investigation was just a front for Nunes to cherry-pick intelligence and other information that was made available to that investigation so that Nunes could do exactly what he's doing today, which is releasing memos that try to build a shoddy case to undermine the Mueller investigation. And again, I've got all the respect in the world for the Democrats in the House Intelligence Committee, and if they think the committee is no longer able to effectively do its job with Nunes staying in control, then it would seem that the only other alternative is to end the committee. I mean, if this is the way it's going to go with Nunes running around like a loose cannon, just cherry-picking information and pushing it out to the media, you know, that's crazy. So back to the question, folks. What does anyone think Trump will do? Let's try to catch that bouncing ball. And from the last podcast, episode 54, I mentioned that it sure seems to be moving in the direction that Rod Rosenstein's job is in peril and that Trump is trying to figure out how to gain control. However, it's a little bit late for control at the moment, isn't it? I mean, in reality, firing Rosenstein at this stage would light up the sky with a battle that would really be a politically motivated spectacle, if you can call it that. And besides, Mueller is already lining up Trump for an interview, which means Mueller has already got his facts in a row on an obstruction case, and the Trump interview is just the icing on that cake. So would firing Rosenstein end the investigation? And I would wager to guess that probably not, with what Bob Mueller has collected already so far, which would be used as strong evidence to continue the investigation. The effect and threat of Trump firing Rosenstein to me makes less and less sense every day the Mueller investigation continues to gather evidence. And then there's the fact, folks, that firing Rosenstein would also be an attempt to obstruct justice. Also adding to Mueller's case, it would be seen as an attempt to obstruct justice. So it's anybody's guess, but maybe the reasonable point of view here and the logical point of view doesn't always work with Donald Trump. So we're probably going to get more of the same chaos, more memos, more tweets, and here we are, just like the song says, stuck in the middle of it. So you might wonder, how did Wall Street perform during Watergate? I mean, that might be going through your head with what happened last Friday in the stock market, being down some, well, it was deeper than 666 points, which is a really weird number, isn't it? 666? Good God. It was actually down. As I was watching it dipped a little bit lower. I think I saw it down to like 680 points, and then it kind of, there must have been some buys on the close that brought it back to 666 down. But that's a hell of a tumble. So, it occurred in my mind, I mean, what in the hell happened during Watergate to the stock market? Well, starting from the Watergate break, the break-in that they had, and that was on June 17th of 1972, through Nixon's resignation on August 8th of 1974, the Dow Jones fell about 23.7%. Yes, indeed, times have changed, and there is this little thing called the economy to consider, but folks, if history is a guide, well, there you have it. And, you know, we also had Donald Trump Jr. He always bubbles up, you know, at some point or another, you know, with some little snide something or whatever to add to the picture. And, you know, his future pocketbook, it really depends on his father's legacy. And doesn't it? I mean, it really depends. I mean, he's got the biggest investment in all of this. If it should really go to hell, I mean, his future pocketbook depends on his father's legacy. And the brand, the Trump brand. And he was out on Fox News on Sunday, and I'm quoting him here. He says, "You see the Democratic senators. This is McCarthyism." I'm like, what? "You have a guy screaming, Russia, 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 with no evidence. All this shade for 18 months, screaming about McCarthyism. I mean, the irony is ridiculous at this point." And, oh God, I mean, little Donnie Trump. "The difference is Joe McCarthy had zero proof, and Trump and his campaign staffers, his business interests, and his international finance dealings are such a gold mine that it's going to make the California gold rush look like pocket change by the time they get done digging through all that maze and nasty business. And Trump has every reason not to like the FBI. Don't forget that the FBI is also investigating whether a top Russian banker, Alexander Torshin, who has close ties to the Kremlin, sent money to the NRA to help Trump win the election. Don't forget about that." That article is also in my show notes. "And what about those fast turnover deals mentioned in the Fusion GPS Glenn Simpson testimony? What about those?" Yeah, those fast turnover deals where Trump went to great lengths to hide the names of the buyers. Maybe this is why Bloomberg reported on December 4th that Mueller had subpoenaed bank records from Deutsche Bank. You think those fast turnover deals had anything to do with that subpoena? Maybe that's going to explain all the money that's flowing into Trump's golf courses in Scotland and Ireland that, according to Glenn Simpson, showed hundreds of millions of dollars flowing in from unknown sources, where on paper they showed all of that money flowing in from the Trump organization. Yep, maybe those bank records might explain a lot about those weird cash flows, those awfully strange cash flows. You know, I wouldn't call it McCarthyism here, little Donnie. That's the last thing it is, in unwinding hundreds of millions of dollars in transactions from your family business that were probably meant to be concealed. Well, that's also going to take a little bit of time now, isn't it? A little bit of time. Well, folks, we've got, we've got a little something coming up here. Yep, so long, it's been good to know you. This time it's a White House nominee for the Council on Environmental Quality, according to an article from The Hill. And The Hill says that the White House is planning on withdrawing the nomination of Kathleen Hartnett White to lead the Council on Environmental Quality, according to The Washington Post. Administration officials told the publication that Hartnett White's nomination did not garner enough momentum, and some Senate Republicans had expressed reservations about her experience. Oh my goodness, God forbid. The Hill has reached out to White, but she had no comment. Hartnett White is also a fellow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, has expressed uncertainty on how much humans have contributed to climate change. She says, "I'm not a scientist, but in my personal capacity, I have many questions that remain unanswered by current climate policy," she said at her confirmation hearing. "I think we indeed need to have more precise explanations of the human role and the natural role," she continued. And she was also a critic of the Obama administration's environmental initiatives, as you can imagine. And this is kind of where we saw exactly how she felt about it. She called all those things diluted and illegitimate battle against climate change. And she said that in an op-ed for The Hill last year. And she also argued against regulations such as the Clean Power Plan rule for power plants. The Council on Environmental Quality deals with a variety of issues such as infrastructure, conservation, and air quality. Well, that's interesting. Another one gone, thank God. Well, in this next article coming up here, it is from February 1st, Vanity Fair. And it says that the Department of Labor report mysteriously disappears after contradicting Trump. Wow, what did they do with it? What happened to that Department of Labor report? And why did it disappear? Well, this article is a warning to us all about how they rigged the system. And I've gone on about that in the last episode, and how they run their propaganda machine by sucking away all the oxygen from our democracy. That's how it's done. And the article goes in to say, folks, that back in December, Trump's Department of Labor proposed nixing an Obama-era rule. Well, go figure about that. It had Obama's name on it. And the rule said that tips are the property of the service-facing employees who earned them, and that employers cannot force them to share. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me. Instead, the Department of Labor claimed that if workers like waiters and bartenders were required to pool their tips, the money could be divided up to reward employees like dishwashers and line cooks who do not receive gratuity. And at first glance, this seemed like a fair deal, doesn't it? But in theory, folks, it could narrow the pay gap between the front and the back of house, as they call them, employees, the dishwashers and the frontline servers. In practice, owners would not be required to distribute the money at all. They wouldn't have to distribute the money. There's no law that says that they would. And they could skim off the top. They could do things like that. And they could use it any way that they see fit. Including just putting it in their pocket. And not just that, folks, but employers could say to the back staff that the hourly rate is smaller than usual because we share tips. So for a lot of reasons, people should be allowed to keep the tips that they make, and employers should pay a living wage for their hourly employees. Well, the article continues to say that critics were quick to pan the plan. And they would likely have been even angrier had the Department of Labor actually published the results of a study showing the extent to which revealing the rule would screw over workers. Instead, the article says, according to a report from Bloomberg Law, after Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta was presented with an analysis showing that workers could lose billions of dollars in tips as a result of this proposal, he first ordered the staff to revise the data methodology to lessen the expected impact. But despite showing progressively reduced tip losses, the numbers still looked bad. Well, so what did he do? Acosta turned to opinion C, or option C, which was simply bury the report. Of course. And they wound up receiving approval from the White House, of all things, go figure, to publish a proposal on December 5th that removed the economic transfer data altogether. The White House said just remove the data altogether. And that's not the only time, folks, that the Trump administration dodged the facts to make their case seem even better. In fact, last September, the New York Times reported that in order to build a case for admitting the fewest number of refugees since 1980, data showing that refugees generated $63 billion more in revenue than they cost over the past decade, it had all of a sudden been conveniently left out of a Department of Health and Human Services report. They just left it out. You know, if you're trying to make a point, why show data that refugees generated $63 billion more in revenue than they cost over the past decade? If you're trying to show that you don't want refugees, just don't include it. Just leave it out. Well, that same month, folks, the Wall Street Journal also noted that the Treasury Department had removed a 2012 economic analysis that contradicted the administration's claims that workers would benefit most from Trump's giant corporate tax cut. Yep. Well, if it contradicts the tax cut, just throw it out. We don't want people to know that the corporations are really going to benefit more from this than the workers. Wow. So why would we trust the Trump administration here, folks, with this going on? Why would we even begin to trust him? I mean, he's running whatever he can, whatever department he can. He's doing anything he can do with a mobster mentality where people generally just have to pledge loyalty to Donald Trump when we ordinarily pledge loyalty to the flag and country, right? Isn't that how it works? Well, this is an anything-goes administration here with a vote of no confidence from me. Let's take a look at how long Trump has left in office while we're doing this here. Go to howlonguntiltrumpleaves.com. Howlonguntiltrumpleaves.com. And it looks like he's got 1,080 days. Oh my God, wow. Hang in there, folks. We'll be right there the whole way, jabbing at him. Just hang in there. Well, talking about hang in there, we've got an interesting story coming up here. Stay right there. Well, according to The Hill, Trump is suing Palm Beach County Property Appraiser's Office over a golf course's tax bill. He's suing them. And the president has sued the Palm Beach County property appraiser over the tax bill for his golf course in Jupiter, Florida, according to the Palm Beach Daily News. And according to the newspaper, Trump has for the past 5 years challenged the property tax bill for the Trump National Golf Club. For the past 5 years. And what he's doing, what I'm going to describe to you what he's doing, is exactly what Glenn Simpson in his testimony said he found that Trump does. So get this. In his financial disclosures for 2016 and 2017, Trump listed the value of the golf course as over $50 million. And that was in his financial disclosures. Fast forward, the county has reportedly given a $19.7 million estimate to the course in Jupiter. And Trump received a $398,315 bill from the Palm Beach County tax collector, according to the Daily News. The amount was based upon the evaluation the property was appraised at, according to the property appraiser. Well, Trump just went ahead and sent a wire transfer of $296,595, and he decided to sue. And his Tampa-based attorney called the amount that Trump sent a good faith estimate of the actual amount he should pay, according to the newspaper. But that's interesting. So the appraiser says it's worth $19.7 million. Trump says it's worth $50 million on his financial disclosures. So, I mean, couldn't the appraiser use the $50 million and effectively almost more than double the cost of the tax bill from $398,000 to maybe $800,000 based on Trump's valuation? But Trump isn't happy with that valuation that they came up with of 19.7. Although he said it was worth $50 million, he doesn't even like the $19.7 million estimate. I mean, that's exactly what Glenn Simpson was talking about in his testimony. He would say he would inflate it on one side when it was convenient and deflate it on the other side. Interesting stuff. Well, this next story here, I really expect this one, and I've got, of course, a link in my show notes. I really expect this next story to cause Republicans to stand up and scream just before their minds just explode at the concept of a universal basic income. That's right, folks. Universal basic income. It's called UBI. And it kind of looks like this is by hell or high water here. It looks like this is going to be the way forward, folks, according to this article by Mother Jones. And the article says that, I don't care what your job is. If you dig ditches, a robot's going to do that better. If you're a magazine writer, a robot will write your articles better. If you're a doctor, IBM's Watson will no longer assist you in finding the right diagnosis from its database of millions of case studies and journal articles. It will just be a better doctor than you. And CEOs, sorry, forget it. Robots are going to run companies better than you do. Well, that's interesting because they make millions and millions of dollars, isn't it? And it goes on to say, artistic types, forget it. Robot will paint and write and sculpt better than you. And think you have social skills that no robot can match? Yes, they can. Within 20 years, maybe half of everyone out there is going to be out of jobs. Within 20 years. A couple of decades after that, most of the rest of you will be out of jobs, the article says. But what about 20 years from now, or 30? We all won't be out of jobs by then, but a lot of us will, and it will no longer be a golden age. And until we figure out how to fairly distribute the fruits of robot labor, it will be an era of mass joblessness and mass poverty. So, folks, this is kind of an interesting outlook here, isn't it? I mean, they're talking about 20 years from now going out 30, but starting at 20 years from now, the jobs are going to be going away. And it doesn't sound like there's a damn thing that we're going to be able to do about it. So that's where this concept of a universal basic income is coming from. Really sounds like rough water ahead, doesn't it, folks? Evidently, artificial intelligence is leading the charge, according to the article. And it says around 2025, we'll finally start to see visible progress towards artificial intelligence. A decade later, we'll be up to 1/10 the power of a human brain. And a decade after that, we'll have full human-level AI at about 2045. That should make an interesting podcast by then. And the article goes on to say that this is different from the Industrial Revolution because in a short period of time, the Industrial Revolution complemented our workforce. But artificial intelligence, it's a little bit different. The AI revolution will be nothing like the Industrial Revolution, the article says. When robots became as smart and as capable as human beings, there will be nothing left for people to do because machines will be both stronger and smarter than humans. Even if artificial intelligence creates lots and lots of new jobs, it's of no consequence. No matter what job you name, robots will be able to do it. They will manufacture themselves, they will program themselves, they will repair themselves and manage themselves. If you don't appreciate this, then you don't appreciate what's barreling towards us, the article says. And the article goes on to quote an Oxford-Yale survey, and it says that if that is right, we're going to face an employment apocalypse sooner, far sooner than that. The disappearance of routine work by all kinds by the mid-2030s sounds like a reality. That represents nearly half of the U.S. labor force. Half of the U.S. labor force. And the consulting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers recently released a study saying much about the same thing. And there's a link to that study in that article by Mother Jones. It predicts that 38% of all jobs in the United States are at high risk of automation by the early 2030s, most of them in routine occupations, it says, routine occupations. In the even nearer term, the World Economic Forum predicts that the rich world will lose about 5 million jobs to robots by 2020. 5 million jobs by 2020. While a group of artificial intelligence experts writing in the Scientific American figures that 40% of the 500 biggest companies will vanish within a decade. In another sharp thinker here, folks, about our jobless future is a man named Martin Ford, according to the article, who's authored this book called The Rise of the Robots. And he goes on to say that mass joblessness, he warns, isn't limited to low-skill workers, nor is it something we can fight by committing to better education. Artificial intelligence will decimate any job that's predictable, which means nearly all of them. So higher education, getting a more in-depth education, doesn't seem like it's going to help. So mass joblessness here, folks, of all types of work is going to inevitably lead to a universal basic income. And what that means is that everyone would qualify for a certain level of income from the state, but the level of guaranteed income would be fairly modest because, of course, we would still want people to work. And you might think this is far-fetched in my show notes. You'll find a story that I'm linking to where Stockton, California, well, folks, they're going to try it. And that just came out today in an article, and it's published by WND.com, again in the show notes. And just a little bit from that article, it says, the mayor of Stockton, California is leading an experiment with universal basic income, which is set to start by giving low-income residents $500 a month, no questions asked. The mayor, who is Michael Tubbs, calls his city ground zero for issues like wage stagnation, rising housing prices, and loss of middle-class jobs that affect the nation. And the mayor says that, I feel that as mayor, it's my responsibility to do all I could do to begin figuring out what's the best way to make sure that folks in our community have a real economic floor. And there's someone else here that the article quotes named Dorian Warren, serves as co-chairman of the Economic Security Project, which is kicking in $1 million to help the initiative. And Dorian said that the goal is to gather data on economic and social impacts of giving people a basic income. So they're gathering data through this. In addition to tracking what residents do with the money, Warren said that they will be monitoring how a basic income affects things like self-esteem and identity. What does it mean to say, here is unconditional guaranteed income just based on you being a human being? Warren asked. What does it mean to say that? And the overall hope here, folks, is to demonstrate the potential of universal basic income, as it's being called, and to encourage other places to give it a try. UBI has recently gotten a boost from Silicon Valley moguls concerned about income inequality, and one of those is Elon Musk, evidently. But the idea of UBI isn't all actually new, says Michelle Anderson, according to this article, and she is a Stanford law professor. Get this, folks. UBI, the Universal Basic Income, was first pitched by Nixon. Nixon? You've got to be kidding me here. It was first pitched by Nixon as an answer to post-industrial job losses. And all I can say is, good God, a Republican? Nixon? Of all people. Well, evidently, with this experiment that they're doing in Stockton, Anderson said that Stockton may discover it gets more economic stimulus by giving money to its citizens rather than corporations it hopes will bring in jobs and tax revenue. So we've all heard about in the news here, there's tons of money that goes into corporations, when they say they want to come to a community, tons of money. And in some cases, these communities just end up losing because the corporations pick up and leave. Well, she's saying that they may discover that it gets more, the economy of that little town gets more economic stimulus by giving the money to its citizens rather than those corporations. Wow. So that's interesting, folks. And I want to thank you for tuning in to us this week. And get yourself some of those rose-colored glasses, will you? They just might help. You know, get some of those rose-colored glasses like Trump's got. I hear they just show the beauty and they hide all the truth. Well, folks, I want to thank you for joining us and tell your friends about us, RustedCulture.com. Till then.